We might be childhood friends, and I might drive you around the bend, but I'm sure it's crazy, kid, to work it out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose, but I guess that's how it goes. Let's keep falling in love with our strange bedfellows.
Hi, hi, and welcome to Strange Bedfellows. My name is Tanner Greenring, and I am a strange bedfellow.
My name is Jamie Greenring, also known as Jamie Green. I am also a strange bedfellow.
Yeah, I think that's true. The reason we came up with that name was like, oh, Jack and I are unfamiliar with the romance genre, so the two of us are strange bedfellows with romance. But also, we sort of have this reputation of being a little Bert and Ernie-like.
Yes, that's true. But I'm not a strange bedfellow to romance, but I'm a strange bedfellow to this podcast.
You are neither a strange bedfellow to the romance genre, nor are you a strange bedfellow to me. We've had a child together.
I'm realizing now I don't know what strange bedfellows means. I thought it meant an unlikely pair. You're making it sound like strangers to each other's beds.
I think we're both saying the same thing. We are not an unlikely pair.
Okay.
Right? We are a likely pair. We're married. We have a son.
I mean, we're a factual pair. We are a pair.
And a carnal pair.
Stop.
We're lovers. Jamie hates it when I refer to us as lovers.
Doesn't everyone hate that?
No, I think most people embrace it and love it.
No, they absolutely don't.
Do you mean most people hate it when I refer to you as my lover?
No, most people just hate the word lover. There was a whole SNL sketch about what a gross word that is.
Nope, I like it. I also like it.
You like it ironically
when...
because you know it bothers me. Same. It is exactly the same as how you like Jar Jar Binks.
I also like it when I wear an outfit that matches an outfit you're wearing when we're going somewhere public, like a wedding or something like
that. Well, this was a thing for a while because your best suit, like you had one suit and it was navy blue. And for a long time, my best semi-formal dress was navy blue.
Yeah.
And I think you really liked that.
Yeah. I like matching. I like matching with you. I like it when people can glance at us and sort of know that we're a pair just at a glance, you know?
And you don't trust, like, body language and affection to do that?
No, I don't trust body language or affection to do pretty much anything.
Like, to convey to your partner that you love them?
You know the premise of the show, right? We're Jack and I are repressed, icked out by affection and romance and sex.
Do we have to talk about love languages?
Do you want to talk about love languages? Because Jack and I have the same love language.
Small gifts?
Yeah, we like receiving small gifts and giving them.
Right, so it's your giving language and your receiving language can be different. But
I think mine is the same.
Yeah.
I think I love giving and receiving small gifts. You know me. You know how often I'm constantly buying little things for
Miles. Yeah.
Miles, our son.
We just had a conversation about how, and you instigated this conversation about how it's becoming a problem.
It's becoming a problem because he now, like, when we pick him up from school, he'll demand a toy.
He'll just say, new toy? New toy? I have a very painful memory of being a very small child, maybe 4 years old, and my dad came home from a business trip, and, like, the first thing I asked him was if he'd brought me anything, and I think he shamed me for that.
Yeah.
And it, like, just thinking about it, I feel so awful. I was four, but I felt really bad, and I still do.
Well, I hope to never do that to Miles. There's literally, I'm going to say, 6 different toys waiting in the wings in our house right now that can just be deployed at a moment's notice.
Have you figured out?
Actually, several of them are in the trunk of the car.
Okay, I was going to say, because you used to keep the emergency toys in the closet in the office, and he just learned that that's where they are, and one day he just found them all.
Now they're two of them are in the pantry in the kitchen. This isn't useful for any of you sex havers.
Is it in the pantry in the kitchen that he goes into to play in all the time?
No, the other one.
Okay.
And then
we're going to sound so rich and luxurious having two pantries. I think one of them has some rotten onions in it.
Yeah, we live in the world's smallest house, sex bugs, so don't be envious of our lifestyle. This is a podcast where we talk about the romance genre and how it relates to various forms of media. Last week, we read a book. This week, we're watching a film.
Mm-hmm.
And the film we watched was the 2020 film, Emma.
Period.
Emma, period.
That's how it's always styled. Emma, period.
Emma, period. Directed by...
Autumn de Wilde.
Autumn de Wilde. Do we know anything about Autumn de Wilde and what else she has directed?
We do. She directed...
Sounds like maybe we don't.
A lot of music videos.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
Like Spike Jones.
Yes.
Anyone I would know?
Beck.
Oh, okay.
A little someone called Rilo Kiley.
So she's sort of a hip video director.
Decembrists, Jenny Lewis.
Oh, boy. Tanner, 2006 Tanner is calling, and he's very interested in everything you have to say right now.
Florence and the Machine, yeah.
Did she do a Bright Eyes music video, too, no. by chance?
No.
So, yeah, this is her feature film directorial debut?
I think so.
God, knocked it out of the park.
I know. It's so... We love this one.
Yeah, I will say, Jamie and I had an aborted run in another piece of media that I shall not name because we're not going to shame it. We didn't enjoy it. And we decided to give up on it, but it was a game. We were going to play a game because I thought, like, well, Jack's never going to play a game with me. But we weren't having fun with it. We were both feeling pretty cranky, and we were trying to get through this game. And we're like, this is not fun. Let's do something much more fun, much more enjoyable, something that feels familiar and nice to us. So we decided to watch one of our mutual favorite films, the 2020
Emma period.
Starring Big Bug Eyes.
She has a name.
She's a beautiful woman. I'm not saying that she's like,
no.
Her Big Bug Eyes make her unattractive.
And that's the whole thing with this movie, which I think may have initially been an observation from my friend James, must credit James, that everyone in this movie has a fascinating face.
What do you think it says about us that my oldest friend is named Jim and your oldest friend is named James? You think that's like you're sort of this like East Coast elitist sort of like,
oh,
my best friend is named James and I'm like a flyover country like Midwestern boy where I'm like, well, my best friend's name is Jim.
I guess.
So sort of like Prince and the Pauper kind of, right? A little bit.
I guess. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, James noticed that everyone is sort of... There's like got to be a nice way to say this because it's like everyone is odd looking, but like everyone is also very attractive.
I mean, part of that is movies, right? And there is a scene where there are maybe like 10 or 15 extras who are all young women. And I noticed that they were all just beautiful, just normal,
just
beautiful.
Normal, beautiful.
In the school, like just
ladies.
Normal, beautiful girls. But... almost everyone in this movie, except for the actress who plays Jane Fairfax, who is just normal beautiful, is like weird beautiful.
There's something odd and alluring about
them. Like
both the men and the women.
Everyone. Like Anya Taylor-Joy has these huge eyes that are set very far apart.
Yeah.
Johnny Flynn's face is made out of mushy clay and he has a scar on one cheek.
Yep.
Mia Goth has no eyebrows.
No, and she looks like a female character in a video game where you can sort of style your own character before you've done any of the styling.
She looks or like she would be playing a far future android.
Yeah.
Josh O'Connor, big ears. Connor Swindells, who plays Robert Martin, head is a perfect rectangle.
His perfect rectangle. Yeah.
The woman who plays Mrs. Elton, longest neck.
Yeah,
in the
she's
world.
Got the longest neck in the world.
Tiny little head on a long neck, but it's beautiful.
But everyone is so beautiful. It's such an interesting casting choice all around.
I love it. It's love it so much.
I love it too. How many times have you seen this film?
I think this was, if this was two for you, it was three for me.
Okay, because I was chiding you last night as we were watching it because you're what's the best way to put this? A sleepy baby.
Yes.
And you fall asleep on the couch every night.
Most nights. Many nights.
I would say between the hours of 8 p.m. and
9:30.
9:15.
Well, because if I make it to 9:30, I should probably go upstairs.
Yep.
But the 8:30 to 9 half hour is my sweet spot. Usually halftime of a basketball game.
Yeah,
or
we're
like
usually watching a basketball
during
game.
During the basketball game, the squeaking of sneakers on the court is just the perfect sound to drift away to.
And that washed over you last night. You decided to go supine as we were watching the
film. I was horizontal.
Yeah. And then
you got worried.
I was a little worried. I thought maybe you were nodding off, which I think actually you were.
I was very sleepy. I was very sleepy, and it was really a calculation. And you even said, like, do you want to finish this tomorrow?
I was trying not to be a jerk about it. At first I said, like, oh, well, because, Jamie, just gentle reminder, do have to do a podcast about this movie tomorrow.
But that gentle reminder was not about me dozing. It was because I was looking at Instagram.
Right, this was pre-dozing.
That was pre-dozing. I was horizontal, but I was looking at Instagram stories while watching the movie, because what else do you do while watching a movie?
Yep.
And you said that. You said, hey, don't forget, we do have to. And I was like, I've seen this movie so many times.
Right, which means three times,
which is a lot. But then when I started dozing, possibly because I wasn't giving myself the extra stimulation of looking at Instagram.
Yeah, my fault.
Think about that. Yeah. You did offer to... Well, I didn't realize you were just saying that to be polite. I thought you were actually offering to turn it off and finish it today. Today is the day we watched it last night, so today. But I just knew we didn't have time.
Oh no, we didn't have time. Your mommy and stepdaddy are coming tomorrow,
and my sister.
And
your sister. They're coming tomorrow, and so we needed to tidy up plus watch a baby during a blizzard.
Oh yeah, it's a blizzard.
It's a blizzard, everyone.
By the time you hear this, it will no longer be a blizzard.
Might be a new blizzard by that point.
Might be a new blizzard. But so yeah, you started nodding off during the film.
I wasn't like nodding off, but I was getting sleepy and cozy and could have fallen asleep, but I didn't.
Listen, Jack falls asleep during the movies all the time. He's admitted as much.
And then so, he like still comes on and company. Talks about them?
He tries. He certainly tries.
Well, I've seen this one a lot of times, and so I'm ready. And then even when it was done, instead of going right to bed, I had us watch 10 minutes of outtakes, which I will not call bloopers. They're not funny enough to call bloopers.
I don't think they called them bloopers, did they? They called it a gag reel.
Even worse. There are no gags.
Well, there's some gags.
Except every time that Miranda Hart, who plays Miss Bates, messes up a line. What did she say? Tits and ass? No.
Yeah, she does. She just says some kind of general curse.
I shall be so... Oh, tits and asses.
It's very funny.
Like sexual curse.
Yeah.
And also, like, we also discovered watching the bloopers, because we bought it. Yeah, okay, fine. We spent $15 and bought the film.
And bought one of our favorite movies. Like, why not?
Yeah. We discovered that Anya Taylor-Joy, in the iconic scene where Mr. Knightley confesses his love to Emma Woodhouse, and she gets a nosebleed. We discovered, I think so, that they actually gave Anya Taylor-Joy a nosebleed.
Yeah, it's so they're shooting the scene, and the capsule went too far up her nose, and I think actually went into her throat. Like it was scripted that she would get a nosebleed, and so they cut the scene, and they're like trying to get the capsule out of her nose, and then she actually gets a nosebleed from it.
And they just use it.
They use it. It was actually really amazing to me, because just in terms of what film actors have to do, where they're like, okay, is it bleeding? Oh no, is that real blood? Is that real blood? And they're like, let's just use that. We'll just use that. And they're like, just wipe it off until your head back and like, you know, get ready for the real blood to come out. So they wipe the blood off and she's like tilting her head up. And then she looks at Johnny Flynn, who plays Mr. Knightley, and she's like, okay, just ask me to marry you again. And he goes, will you marry me? Just like cueing the emotion from her, and just she's right there. And it was just like, how do you film actors do it?
Not something I could do.
No. Yeah. Pretty amazing.
You mentioned Johnny Flynn. Do you want to tell the sex bugs about how the only thing that we listen to in whenever this movie came out, like May of 2020, the only thing that was playing in our house, in our apartment in Brooklyn at the time, was the soundtrack to this film.
So I think this might have been the last movie that I saw in a theater. Because it came out mid-February 2020. And then we watched it again maybe in like April or May. As soon as it came out on rental, actually. I remember it was one of those things where I paid $25 to rent it. And I got really into the soundtrack, which is very beautiful. And I listened.
And it stars Mr. Knightley.
Well, right. So the credit song is him singing it. And what I learned as I like suddenly became obsessed with him and this movie is that he is also an incredibly talented singer-songwriter.
Which Emma also discovers in the movie. It's the moment that she falls in love with him.
That's
Jane
true.
Jane Fairfax is playing the piano. What's it called?
Pianoforte. It's just a piano.
Yeah. And Johnny Flynn is...
he plays like violin and
playing
sings
the
a
violin
song with her.
And singing a song.
And it sounds beautiful.
Beautiful voice. Yeah.
He has such a great voice. So the soundtrack is like some jaunty classical music that's really great, plus some like English folk songs. But then he sings the credit song and it's so beautiful. And did Miles like it or did I like make him like it?
I think you made him like it, just like you made him like Into the Woods.
He liked Into the Woods fine. And for a long time, even once we moved here, so, you know, that summer, I think I would play that song every time I like got him dressed in his pajamas.
Yeah.
Because I think so. It took exactly as long as a pajama change. I associate it with standing by his changing table. And we were saying last night, like, what would happen if we played that song? Would he remember it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think he maybe in some like deep lizard brain part of his head he would recognize it.
Like when he FaceTimed his nanny and then started hysterically crying.
Yeah. That was bad. that wasn't fun.
It was awful. Anyway.
I would love for you to describe this video novel.
Okay.
If you're able to.
I am.
You've seen it more than I would do.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, no. I'll
oh, you've
you
seen
would?
It more than
you
me.
Would?
I would, and I would be happy to, and I would be happy to shoulder that burden for you. But you've seen the film more than I have, so I feel like I should give it to you to.
I did do it last week, but I will do it.
No,
again.
I know, and that's what I mean. I like obviously you did it last week. I would love to take this on for you.
Would you?
I would love to. It was in our vows, I think, when we got married. I said I will.
We'll take turns.
I'll do all the hard work.
I don't think you. If you did vow that, I have not been taking proper advantage of it.
Will you describe the book?
I'm going to describe the movie.
The video book. The video novel.
Okay, because there's also like a book version of this, which I haven't read. I think I saw the Gwyneth Paltrow one. But, okay.
They, am I doing they 90... novelized this movie?
Am I doing 90 seconds or...
Yes.
Okay.
Well, do you not think you need 90 seconds or...
No, I do. Last week, I think I needed like 20 seconds. This one's
okay.
Heftier.
All right, let me head over to Google. One moment. 90
A
seconds.
Fun fact is when I was in college, I worked on a musical that was a modern adaptation of Emma.
Okay, what was it called?
I think it was called Emma.
Okay. On the nose. Little on the nose. In 5, 4, 3... Go.
The movie opens with Emma Woodhouse being very upset because her governess, Miss Taylor, is getting married and is moving out of her house and is leaving her all alone. But Emma is very pleased because she made this match, and her dad is like, you better calm down with matchmaking because whenever you foresee something, it happens. And she's like, okay. And then she finds out that there's a new girl at the boarding school in town. I don't totally understand what kind of boarding school this is. Harriet Smith, she's a mystery man's bastard child. I think that's what that meant. And so she's in town and Emma decides to befriend her. And she does in this kind of weird messed up way where Harriet is very fawning and Emma kind of 30 left or 30 elapsed?
Left.
It's so complicated. And so they become friends, and Emma is trying to set up Harriet with Mr. Elton, the very weird preacher in town. I need more time. I need more time. I'm just going to keep going.
Okay.
We're turning off the clock, and I'm going to do it.
Okay.
So Harriet has a big crush on Mr. Elton, and this is the part of the movie that is the most like Clueless. Because
I wouldn't say that that's necessarily true. Emma sort of coerces Harriet into being into Mr. Elton.
Oh, and you think Ty just does it on her own?
Ty.
Oh, I thought you were saying that my comparison to Clueless was not correct. You're saying that my description is not correct.
Yeah, I don't think Mrs. Harriet is necessarily super into Mr. Elton until Emma
pushes it,
compels her to be.
I think that's fair. Okay, I'm going to continue. But then we find out that Mr. Elton actually has a crush on Emma, not on Harriet. And everything that Emma has been interpreting as him having a crush on Harriet is actually him having a crush on Emma. And he's really shitty about it. He's a little baby
he's
brat.
He's sort of a little wiener.
Yeah. At the same time, I haven't even mentioned Mr. Knightley.
I know. Which one?
Okay, we'll get into that. But Mr. Knightley, Johnny Flynn, very important thing to include in the summary is that we see his tush.
Oh, yeah. You see his tush, and he does, and I'm sorry, the Bingus Butchers.
None.
Will not be making an appearance tonight.
Because he very deliberately covers it.
Artfully. There's a moment where he is butt naked. Naked as the day he's
no,
born.
No, he has a shirt on, because he's holding the shirt over his back.
Well, he is butt naked.
Oh, first he's butt naked, and you see his tush.
And then you see his tush. Nice tush.
Nice
tush. Here's the problem, though, is like I see my baby's tush so often now that it's just like everything is compared to my baby's tush. And it's like, well, I don't know. I guess his tush looks like my baby's tush.
He's got more of a tush than our baby does.
Our baby has like a little bit of a tush.
Just a little. Okay. So, Mr. Knightley.
He was naked this morning.
Our baby.
Our baby. And this is dad talk now. Our baby our baby was naked this morning because we had French toast with American cheese on it.
Which is what my family does. It's very good. You should try it.
And he spilled syrup all over
his... He was already shirtless.
All over himself. But he was in his pajamas anyway from last night.
So we were like, well, we're going to get dressed.
So you stripped him nude.
Yeah.
And then I was in the playroom with him, playing with him.
And he kept sticking his butthole in your face.
He kept sticking his butthole in my face. And at first, it was just an accident. But then you commented on it. And then it became like... a thing, and then he just kept doing it. He just intentionally kept, literally, and this is not like, literally kept jamming his butthole in my face.
He would like go down and downward dog and just, it was so good. All right, so tushes. So Mr. Knightley is Emma's brother-in-law, we realized. It seems like he's just a family friend, but her sister has married his younger brother. So he comes to visit a lot. And they're like kind of, they have a kind of like sparring sibling relationship. For all the clueless heads out there, he's Josh.
They think of themselves as brother and sister.
Right. And then
she gets married. Miss Taylor gets married to a local divorcee named
Widower?
Mr.
Widower.
Is he a widower?
Yeah, Mr. Weston.
Mr. Weston.
I don't think people really did divorces often.
You're probably right. Although this is like well after Henry VIII.
So the reason I know about that is there's a Sarah McLean book where there's a divorce and you had to like get an act of parliament.
Okay.
That might have just been if you were aristocracy. But anyway, why does that matter?
Who she's marrying?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to come into our power ranking power couple later.
Okay. So then Emma's frenemy Jane Fairfax comes to town and Emma is starts thinking that Mr. Knightley likes him. Oh my God, I haven't mentioned Mr. Churchill.
Yeah, there's this guy named Frank Churchill, which I'm pretty sure is the name that, what's his face? K-Pax.
Oh, Let Me Be Frank?
What? Oh, yeah. Frank
Underhill.
Wait, what's his name? Underhill.
Churchill in the movie.
Churchill, okay.
So he's this
what's
like,
that guy's name?
Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. Okay. I thought that was his character's name in House of Cards.
So Frank Churchill is this like local bachelor who Emma's been hearing about. Oh, it's Mr. Weston's son. He's Mr. Weston's son.
He's Mr. Weston's son.
But he has a different name because he's his uncle's heir. So he shows up and Emma's like, and they decide to throw a ball. Yeah. I'm just going to skip to what matters.
Okay.
And at the ball, Emma and Mr. Knightley dance together and realize that they're in love with each other.
Yes. And then they do kissing.
Not yet, because then they go to the picnic and Emma right. is and mean Emma to Miss Bates.
Herself. Yes.
And Mr. Knightley yells at her.
She has seen you grow up from when her notice of you was an honor to have you now in thoughtless spirits and the pride of the moment. Laugh at her and humble her and before her niece and before others, many of whom are entirely guided by your treatment of her. It was badly done indeed.
It was poorly done.
And she feels very bad. And they stop talking for like a day probably. And then they go, oh, and Harriet had a crush on Mr.
Right?
Knightley. And then there's also Robert Martin, who's the rectangular faced farmer who is in love with Harriet, who Harriet's in love with, but Emma had told her not to accept his proposal because he's too low class for her. And Mr. Knightley was like, that's the best she's going to get. And so they fix that and get Harriet and Robert Martin back together. And then Emma
because
and Mr.
Because we discover that Harriet's father
is just a galoshes
after
maybe,
he after she came of age, reached out to her, and we discover that he's a tradesman.
But even
not,
still,
not like a highborn.
But even still, Harriet and Robert Martin love each other and should be married. And then Emma and Mr. Knightley are out under a tree and he confesses his love for her and she gets a nosebleed. And then she's like, yeah, no,
like
I will fix this. What?
It's like an anime when okay. When I, characters.
I'm almost
sorry,
done.
Bear with me.
I'm almost
when
I'm
characters
almost done.
Bear with me.
And so then,
when characters
at that point,
get horny
Emma
in animes.
What?
When characters get horny in animes, their
get
nose bleeds.
Weird. So yeah. Then Emma fixes Harriet Smith and Robert Martin, and then she and Mr. Knightley get married. And I forgot to mention that her dad is Bill Nighy, and he's scared of cold drafts.
The science guy?
Shut up. Bill Nighy.
What?
Nighy.
What a casting.
Nighy.
Nighy. Right. Nighy. I remember when and he was in Doctor Who.
Apologies to all the English lit majors for how I just butchered that summary.
Yes, apologies.
Oh, my sweatshirt's on backwards.
While we're talking about Mr. Elton.
Yes.
I wanted to introduce a segment. It's called Hashtag Swoon.
I was hoping we would talk about this.
At the 41-minute mark, they are at a Christmas banquet at the Weston house. And it's everyone. It's the Knightleys. It's Isabella. It's
Isabella is
Emma.
Emma's sister.
It's
she's
Papa
like a hypochondriac.
Morehouse. It's Mrs. Bates. Like, everyone is there at this Christmas dinner. Mr. Elton, haplessly trying to make conversation, mentions that it's snowing. And Isabella Morehouse, Emma's older sister, loses her goddamn mind.
I dare say we shall have snow tonight.
Snow? Tonight?
When did it commence?
It is falling fast.
It was snowing when your mother died.
Well,
what is to be done?
Emma!
She sort of spends the movie losing her goddamn mind, usually over sort of like a helicopter parenting her three-year-old.
Yes.
Who she seems very worried about. So anyway, Mr. Elton says, oh, I hear it's snowing, and everyone loses their mind, and everyone decides to leave the party. And everyone hurries into their coaches. Tanner paused pregnantly, seeing if Jamie would want to hop in and do her burn here.
Why would I want to do my burn? We're in the middle of hashtag swoon.
You don't listen to the show.
I listen to the show, and it honestly upsets me when you imply that I don't, because I do. I have listened to your show forever.
Well, then you'll know that we love to bury segments within
segments. I know,
segments.
But the burn of the week is like so climactic.
Everyone piles into their coaches, and it just so happens that the way the pairing off works, Emma is left alone at the party with one person,
Mr. Elton.
Mr. Elton, who comes out of the party and says, oh, Emma, please let me take you home in my coach.
I'm so confused about how this is hashtag swoon, because this is the scene when he's the biggest wiener.
And they get into the coach and they're making polite conversation. But just a few minutes down the road, Mr. Elton admits that he is deeply in love with Emma and asks her to marry him. And in doing so, he does this maneuver that I put to you, Jamie, is maybe one of the sexiest things a man can do.
Is it when he throws a big hissy fit?
It's cold. It's December. It's Christmas Day. Christmas Eve, maybe.
Oh.
And he is he's wearing a garment into the coach. And then as he's preparing to sort of like admit his love to Emma and ask her to marry him, he gives her bedroom eyes.
And slowly unties his cape.
And then slowly unties the front of his, I would call it a cloak.
Oh, I see where we're going. Are you sure you want to do this on with all the bedpots and sex bugs listening?
And I couldn't help but even I, a relatively straight man, was like, wow, the way that guy is seductively untying his cloak.
We were both laughing at him.
So sexy. The fact that he's wearing a cloak at all, so sexy. And I just, you know, I thought that was hashtag swoon. I think there's something very commanding, powerful, sexual, raw, energetic, dynamic about a man in a cloak.
I feel like at this point I have to explain to Sex Bug Nation what I'm looking at on the Zoom, because yes, even though we are in the same house, we are recording on Zoom. Tanner's in the basement. I'm in the office. It's easier to record that way.
Basement is ice cold.
Yes. And Tanner, what are you wearing to keep yourself warm?
A cloak. A full heavy wool cloak that I bought on Amazon so that I could wear it to walk the dog.
It's like full on Ren Faire.
It's a full caped cloak. Full Ren Faire caped cloak. It's body length. I'm 6'5" and it goes down to my ankles. So I can't imagine the person that this was actually made for. But yes, I'm wearing a full length cloak.
And it makes me feel sexy.
It makes me feel powerful. It makes me feel dynamic. It makes me feel raw. Yeah, I love wearing this cloak. I think it's maybe the sexiest garment I own. You agree? What are you looking at? What are you looking at?
What? Nothing. I couldn't look direct. It's like looking at the sun.
Yeah.
So I had to avert my eyes.
Sexual.
Yeah.
And I've got the hood up now. I look a little bit like
Emperor Palpatine.
Emperor Palpatine. Yeah. Are you doing your nails?
I just had like a little thing I had to.
You can't sit Jamie at her desk, or else she's definitely going to do her nails.
I fidget. I got to fidget with them.
So yeah, that's my hashtag swoon, because he's wearing a very sexy and sexual cape.
I feel like I got conned, because it's like he's being such a gross wiener in that scene.
Yeah.
Like a minute later, the carriage like hits a bump or comes to a sudden stop, and he like falls into Emma's lap and she gets pissed off, rightfully so. And then when she's like been clear that she's rejecting him, he throws a fit and slams on the roof of the carriage. He's like, yeah, stop. And he like gets out and walks home in the middle of the snow. He's just like such
a baby.
Yeah.
Driver, stop the carriage.
Mr. Elton, please.
Driver, stop the carriage!
Later on, they're doing a dance. Well, he marries this woman.
With the longest neck in the world.
Yeah, who sort of, she becomes the alpha in the Elton family.
Yeah.
And kind of pushes him around. But then he does have a little bit of a hissy fit at the ball and starts screaming petulantly there as well.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yes. I was
awake. Shortly after he snubs
Harriet.
Harriet's last name is.
Smith, and refuses Miss to dance Smith. With her. Yep. He's a real jerk. And then Mr. Knightley dances with Harriet to be kind to her, and that's the beginning of trouble.
Yep. She is so horny for him after that point.
I mean, wouldn't you be?
I mean, I was horny for him the whole movie. What a handsome man he is. And what a beautiful singing voice.
Such a beautiful singing voice. Hashtag swoon.
Yeah. It was hard not to be horny for him. Jamie, before we get too far in, I do want to introduce our hit segment that we do on this show.
Which one?
Well, this movie has an ensemble cast, as we discussed.
Oh, yes.
And when we do romance films that have an ensemble cast, like New Year's Eve, most
this
recently.
This is basically like an artsy version of New Year's Eve.
I wouldn't even say artsy. I would say it's basically just another movie like New Year's Eve. What we like to do is we like to do... Power couple power ranking.
Yes.
There are several sexy, dynamic, raw, engaging couples in this film. And I want to go through them and decide which one is the most appealing. I don't even know.
The way you're talking about it, it's like
couple.
You're deciding which
the couple
one
that we would
you want
to
join.
Okay. Yeah. do you want me to go through the couples?
Yes.
All right. So I'll start with the first couple we're introduced to in the film. The opening of the film is a wedding, or like scene two of the film is a wedding between one Ms. Taylor, Emma Woodhouse's governess, and Mr. Weston, who played the police detective in Sherlock.
And who has a very normal face.
Yeah, just
like
totally
distractingly normal in this movie.
Yeah.
So there's the Westons.
They're the Westons. Yes. Sort of. They become like a. They drive the plot forward via like events.
Yeah.
They're the ones who are always throwing parties and throwing the balls and throwing the Christmas dinner and all that kind of stuff. Then there's Isabel, Emma's older sister.
Yeah.
And Mr. Knightley, Mr. John Knightley, who is Mr. George Knightley's younger brother.
Yeah.
And they have several children, and they're sort of...
miserable.
Put upon.
Yeah.
By their children.
Did you recognize... Like, did you feel an affinity for the stressed out parents
dad,
thing?
The dad. He was a little bit too much of like a...
I don't want you to feel
prick.
An affinity for him, because then that means that I'm Isabella.
Yeah.
Which
you're not like a hypochondriac like Isabella. It's not a, what's it called? Is it still called a hypochondriac when you're hypochondriac about someone
your children?
Else? Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of Munchausen's by proxy, but not really. She's hypochondriac. Because she and Mr. Woodhouse are hypochondriac for everyone, I think, because of how Isabella and Emma's mother died.
Oh, right.
We don't
know
the details, but I think that's what it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Woodhouse famously continues to feel a draft throughout the film, which we will get into in a little bit.
Okay. So we've got the Westons,
yes.
Isabella and John Knightley.
Yes. Frank.
And
in my notes, I have Underhill here, but that's not right. That's the guy
Churchill.
From House of Cards. Frank
and
Churchill and Jane Fairfax.
Jane Fairfax.
Who have a secret engagement throughout
yes.
the film. Emma is interested in Mr. Churchill. And he is pretty flirty with her, despite
he
the
is.
Fact that he is secretly engaged to the young and interesting Jane Fairfax. He's sort of a, well, I don't know. I was going to say he's a little bit of a dick, but he's also kind of like, he infuses the sort of quiet, bucolic energy of this town with some
yeah.
sexy energy.
Yeah, he livens things up, but he is kind of a dick. He's got kind of like jock bro energy.
Yeah.
And Mr.
He's
Knightley,
pretty fun at that picnic, though.
Right, but he kind of goads Emma into being very rude to Miss Bates.
Right.
And Mr. Knightley just does not like him.
No, Mr. Knightley doesn't like anyone, though. Or sorry, no, I'm thinking of Mr. Woodhouse. He doesn't like anyone.
No, but in an endearing way.
Yeah.
He's grumpy.
Okay.
So Frank Churchill and Jane Fairfax.
Yep.
Then we have, did we do Mr. and Mrs. Elton?
We're getting to them.
Okay.
So Harriet.
Okay.
And Harriet Smith and Mr. Martin.
Rectangle head.
Yes.
Very, very sweet, cute.
Gets a goose. gets a big Christmas goose.
He's adorable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Elton and Lady Elton.
Mrs. Elton. He's got big ears. He plays Prince Charles? No. Yes?
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He plays Prince Charles on The Crown.
I've seen that over your shoulder.
And she...
I will say, I was looking up this cast before we started to just get everyone's names and saw everyone in modern garb and modern looks. What a handsome guy that guy is.
Oh, yeah, he's adorable.
he's very handsome.
He does have big stick-out ears.
And he sort of... He plays in this film, Mr. Elton is sort of this, like... kind of weaselly, like he's always doing this like sort of scrunch nose grin
and like rubbing his hands together.
Yeah. And he's got this like big collar on because he's the pastor in the little town that they're in.
No, he's a real cutie.
So the final couple.
Wait, can I add one more before you do that?
Yeah.
Miss Bates and her mom.
Okay.
Miss Bates is the woman that Emma is mean to. She's got to be like 6 feet tall.
Yeah, she's the town's gossip. She's sort of what do you call it when you're unmarried back then?
Spinster.
Spinster. Yeah,
and like she just annoys the hell out of Emma, and Emma is mean to her, and she goes everywhere with her mom, who is very old and can't hear, and must be like 4.5 feet tall.
Yeah,
and
she's
tiny. I just appreciate that look.
Yeah.
And so, then
it's Emma
and
Woodhouse
Mr. Knightley.
And Mr. George Knightley. Yeah. Power ranking. Go.
Okay. Should I start at the bottom?
Yes.
At the bottom is... All right. I'm going to be a little edgy here. And this is probably because I'm looking at the Google page with all of their headshots, and so I can see how attractive people are, and I'm not seeing them in the context of the movie. So at the bottom is Miss Taylor, who becomes Mrs. Weston and Mr. Weston, because they're nice, but they're boring.
Okay. Yes. They are nice, but boring.
Yes.
But that's sort of the role they're meant to play in this film.
No, they're great. Above them, I'm going to put Isabella Knightley and John Knightley. Emma's sister and brother-in-law.
Okay.
Largely because the woman who plays Isabella Knightley is very pretty when she's smiling. She doesn't smile at all in the movie. They're miserable in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they're next. Do you want to go or do you want me to keep going?
No, I'm genuinely curious to see.
Okay. Then next is Miss Bates and her mom.
Yeah.
They're not
her
a real couple.
Her mom is so great.
They're great though. Then is Jane Fairfax and Frank Churchill, because they're like Jane
sexy.
Is
you'd
want to
watch them have sex.
No,
right?
No, I still don't like them, because Jane is Emma's frenemy and Frank is Mr. Knightley's frenemy. And so
I wouldn't even say frenemies. I would say enemies. They sort of do this thing throughout the film where when they see one another at a party, they'll just sort of like angrily nod at one another.
Yeah, and like with
it's
Emma,
very funny.
With Emma and Jane, Emma says that like everyone expects us to be friends because we're the same age, and I just like they don't dislike each other, they just don't like each other, and I think also Jane is depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
But so they're just like
I mean she says that in the film.
Yeah, they're like attractive and boring. Then is Harriet and Robert Barton.
Okay.
Because Harriet's a little annoying, but I love Robert Martin's dopey, perfectly rectangular face.
Yeah.
He's also on Sex Education, and he's very sweet there.
Is Mrs. Elton.
Exactly.
Is what you told me.
And so she and Mr. Elton are my number two couple.
Wow,
because
so predictable.
Even though
you chose Emma and Knightley as your
course,
number one.
You have to. But like, even though Mr. Elton is a weenie and Mrs. Elton is a weenie, she's so amazing with her like very long neck and very weird mannerisms. And just like, she's like clearly a character you're meant to think is foolish, but she's just so great. And I love her.
Oh, I think
so
you're
much.
Meant to think she's like pretentious. Like
yeah,
she's
yeah,
constantly
exactly.
like using like Italian phrases.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah,
no,
she's just meant to be annoying.
Yeah, exactly. And then number one is obviously Emma and Mr. Knightley.
Man, I will say They did such a good job of casting these two because they're both so good in these parts. Like, Emma is like precocious and like very clearly like whatever, like 18-year-old girl with too much money and too much time on her hands.
Yeah.
And Mr. Knightley is it like Johnny Flynn as Mr. Knightley is such a good choice. Like, they just did such a good job. They're so good.
Yeah.
They're so easy to like.
Yeah, they're so easy to like, even when they're being so unlikable. Like, she is just like a real, like...
You know who she reminds me of is Jessica Wakefield from the Sweet Valley High books.
No, but...
She's
but,
like a little bit conniving. She's like untrustworthy. She's sort of conniving, a liar.
She's untrustworthy. She's full of herself. She thinks she's smarter than everyone. She's manipulative. She's very manipulative. And the whole thing is that, like, Mr. Knightley is the only person who calls her on it and the only person who sees through it. But she is super likable, even though she is, like, Jessica Wakefield is not likable, but Emma
well,
is.
Well, I think there's a million 12-year-old girls from 1988 who would
not this
disagree
one.
With you.
But she's, like, very conniving and naughty, but is still very lovable. And Mr. Knightley is mean to her.
Yeah.
And yells at her.
He literally yells at her at one point after the debacle at the picnic.
Yeah.
Shouts her down.
Very poorly done.
Yeah,
but they are both very lovable, and I love them. And per your rules for this ranking, I guess I would. If it's really who would you invite into your lovemaking, it's the Eltons.
Yeah. It's who you would invite into your lovemaking, and that's always been the thing about power couple power ranking.
Well, so do your rankings differ from mine?
I would say pretty similar. I would maybe give Miss Taylor and Mr. Weston an edge over Isabel and Mr. Knightley.
Yeah,
Isabel and Mr. Knightley are they're just sort of insufferable.
Yes, that's true.
That's their entire character.
Yeah.
Is that they're like she is a hypochondriac and he's sort of like an exhausted, like put upon father.
Yeah.
But they are very funny and very attractive.
Yeah.
Both of them.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm looking at her contemporary headshot.
I'm realizing now that we're 45 minutes into this that we forgot to take a break. So let's do that quickly.
Okay.
And then we'll come back and continue on after our power ranking.
Hey, everybody. It's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We've done our power ranking, power couple ranking. We've done our hashtag swoons, but this movie, what do you suppose it's rated? PG-13?
Do you want me to tell you? I'm looking at the thing right now. Where would they? PG.
Yeah, it's a pretty soft movie.
Apparently, you can show a tush and be PG.
Yeah, you can show Johnny Flynn's tush in a PG movie. They should show our baby's tush in a PG movie. It's cute.
It's very cute.
He's got a funny tush. And what's he call it? He calls it his rump.
Well, because you call it his rump, and so he called it his rump once.
Yeah, that's funny.
It was good.
It's funny when a 2.5-year-old calls his butt his rump. We've done our power couple power ranking. This movie is rated PG, which means that all they can do is show Johnny Flynn's rump once.
And a kiss.
And it also means that it's not a very sexually charged film.
Well, I would say it is charged, but it does not consummate the... No one bones.
No one bones. So it's going to be on us, Jamie.
To bone.
To sex this movie up a little bit. You are the former romance reviewer of the New York Times. I am famously a sex haver. And let's infuse this movie with a little sex.
All right.
What do you think?
Is there a, I don't remember, is there like a song for two lewd dudes? Like, boop, 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 two lewd dudes.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, I just wrote it.
Interior.
Where are you? I have the script open.
Hartfield Gold Drawing Room. Nighttime.
Oh, it's the last scene.
Mr. Woodhouse, Mr. Knightley, and Emma are all in their habitual places, reading. Except that Mr. Knightley and Emma can't concentrate and keep stealing glances at one another. So that feels like a good opportunity to start sexing things up a little bit. What do you think?
Yes,
so we've got a father, his daughter, and her love interest sitting in the parlor, quietly reading. How are you going to sex that up?
Oh, the father should leave.
Okay. So, Mr. Morehouse.
Woodhouse.
Mr. Woodhouse politely leaves. So now they can just probably just do it, right?
Or, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a good idea then, because that sort of undercuts the improv of the scene a little bit. So, let's keep Mr. Woodhouse there. But here's the thing. So, Mr. Woodhouse in this film, his character's gimmick, what are you doing?
I'm looking at the scene.
Okay.
I have the screenplay up on my other monitor.
His character's gimmick
Why do you police my attention when I was looking at Instagram?
Because you're not paying attention to me and you're not responding to me. And it's a podcast and you have to do those things.
I'm following along on the script that we are currently editing.
Mr. Woodhouse famously is always feeling a draft.
Yes.
And in this scene, he famously feels a draft. Mr. Woodhouse, suddenly.
Do you feel a draft, Mr. Knightley? About the knees?
Mr. Knightley.
I cannot say that I do, sir.
Mr. Woodhouse.
Oh. Is he?
So, what I suspect is happening, Jamie...
Oh, okay.
Is that what we're dealing with here is a deep...
A ghost.
...prologue. And what Mr. Woodhouse is feeling is actually...
A ghost.
A specter.
Yes. Oh, Tanner. Hey, yeah. Tanner.
Yeah.
Is it ghost sex?
It might be.
Ghost sex?
It might be. It could be. So what I think is that actually this film takes place in the Spectral universe, the Netflix original film Spectral. Have you seen it?
No, is that Joel Edgerton?
Joel Edgerton is in it. Yeah, he. No, sorry. That's
that's Bright.
The other one. Bright. That's Bright. Yeah.
Spectral is army guns, ghosts.
Yes, it's an army, and they have special goggles that let them see ghosts, so they can shoot them with ghost
with guns.
Okay. Yeah, but obviously, yeah. Guns don't exist yet in whatever 18,
yes.
1780 or whatever this is.
Yes, they do.
So they don't have ghost guns, and they don't have the ghost goggles that they use to spot.
So they
the
just have to feel. They have to feel.
So
the
they
ghosts
feel
with
them
their
about
bodies.
Their knees. So we can either have, as two lewd dudes, me and you, we can either have Mr. Woodhouse have sex with a ghost, which could be pretty interesting, or use it as an excuse to exit him from the scene, so that freeing up Emma and Mr. Knightley to.
I have a better idea.
Okay.
Which is, we actually follow this scene a little longer. So what happens is Mr. Knightley has a clever idea where he's like, oh, yeah, no, I do feel a draft. And Mr. Woodhouse is like, get the screens. And his little footmen bring in the screens, the like paneled screens that he surrounds himself with to sort of hold in the hot air from the fire.
Yeah.
And that puts the screen in between Emma and Mr. Knightley. And Mr. Woodhouse, so that they can't be seen, so they can hold hands.
They can do smooching, yeah.
And they do a smooch. But what if then, once the screen is up and no one can see each other, the ghost comes around Emma and Mr. Knightley's knees, and instead of Emma and Mr. Knightley having sex with each other, the ghost seduces both of them at once.
Like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, like Ghostbusters.
Like Dan Aykroyd and Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, so the ghost gives them both a blowjob, and
sure.
Their eyes sort of like bug out of their heads, and they're like, boy, what? Right?
I was thinking a little classier.
And what's Mr. Woodhouse doing during all of this?
Like sitting and reading.
So it's just, it's the normal scene.
It's the scene, but instead
except
of...
Except a ghost is giving Mr. Knightley and Emma...
Blowjobs.
Head.
Heads. Yes. So instead of just like very like
chargedly.
Is it chargedly...
two ghosts or just one ghost? And who's the ghost?
Okay. Well, I want it to be one ghost. I'm picturing like a sort of, what's his face from
So they have to take
away.
Turns?
No, is the ghost named No Face?
Yes.
So it's like No Face, but it's just got like infinite. It has as many mouths as it needs.
Okay.
It's like a non-Euclidean Lovecraftian sex horror.
Okay, just it's designed to get it's like Slaanesh, the Dark Prince of Pleasure from Warhammer 40K, one of the chaos gods. You know what I'm talking about, right? You've seen my Warhammer 40K stuff in the basement, right?
I try to avert my eyes because it's too powerful.
Okay. Well, we didn't go through the scene, but I think we did do a good job of sort of punching up the script, because it's
yeah.
Like a whole thing where it's like she sort of like, they do the screens, and Mr. Woodhouse is separated from them, and they do a little bit of like whispering chatting about how Mr. Knightley is in love with her and he's willing to give up his estate to move in with her and her father.
Because her father will never like leave their house.
Right. And then they do a big kiss, and that's about as sexy as the movie gets. But in your version of it, they do all that. Instead of doing a big kiss, they get graphic blowjobs from a ghost.
Yeah.
Okay, at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. And is the dad getting a ghost blowjob
no.
too? You said it's like a Euclidean like horror.
No.
It can like
no.
sort of just...
No. No.
How... What are the... And I'm so curious about this ghost you've invented. What's the extent of its powers? How many people can it give a blowjob at one time?
Your brain cannot comprehend it.
It could give a blowjob to every person on the earth if it wanted to.
I don't know. It slips between dimensions.
You're the one who invented this character.
I'm just trying to help you build this world. If I were to fully conceptualize it, I would instantly go mad.
Okay. It is Lovecraftian then.
Yeah.
In that way. Your mind would
be like
flayed.
not in the racism and homophobia ways.
No, Jack's not here. We don't have to talk about racist authors that we love.
This isn't like a pro Lovecraft thing. It's a pro okay. sex ghost.
Right, okay.
Like a professional sex ghost.
Yes. Ghost professional. So instead of joining the army like all the other ghosts in Spectral, the hit Netflix original Spectral, this ghost has decided to make love, not war.
Mm.
And it goes around giving people
head.
Clandestines head.
Yes.
Yes.
I just want to say head instead of blowjobs because it's less gendered, less anatomatized.
I don't want to litigate the definition of giving head, but I assume that when one is getting head, what it means is that that someone's head is on their genitals.
Oh, I never thought about that before.
And then, therefore, it does make sense for a woman to get head,
but
too.
But then we run into the problem of not knowing if the ghost's mouth is coming from their head.
Where else would it be coming from?
Impossible to comprehend.
Okay. So you're thinking the ghost might look a little bit like something like Slimer.
No.
From Ghostbusters, where it's not, it doesn't have a head necessarily. It's
Slimer
just sort
has
of
a
like
head.
A.
No, Slimer has
no,
a head.
No, Slimer is a head.
No, Slimer just doesn't have a neck.
Slimer doesn't have a body.
Slimer
is essentially
arms.
Just a living head with arms on the side and a tail.
That's called a
Slimer
body.
Slimer looks like a big sperm.
Oh, I guess Slimer has a torso.
Slimer's a little bit confusing. I think Slimer is like, he's essentially a ball with arms, right? It's like a bean with arms.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
So.
Slimer's yucky. Slimer's teeth and gums are a little too much.
Imagine that. Imagine that going down.
Ugh, it's actually like upsetting me to look at. Can we talk about nice things? Like how the guy.
I'm sorry, getting
Robert...
oral sex from Slimer is not a nice thing.
I instead would like to think about how the actor who plays Robert Martin looks like a young baby Highland cow.
Yeah, you famously tweeted about that at one point.
It's not famous. Like, it didn't get a lot of retweets, but I just think about it often because it's true. And it's
you want
nice.
To plug your Twitter while we're here so people can go find it?
Have you not been linking to it in the show notes when I'm on the show?
You'd have to ask Jack. Hmm. I don't. He's the one who edits the show. I'm more of the sort of producer and host. It's kind of my role.
Jack, hey Jack, just put a link to my Twitter in the show notes, please.
The tweet, specifically the tweet where she compares.
Oh, I don't know where. I'm not going to be able to find that.
No, Jack will find it. Jack will find it.
That sounds like a lot of work.
We've done Tulu Dudes. Do you have any other notes?
I got a burn. This is full of burns.
Jamie?
Yes?
I have gotten through most of my notes, but I am curious about one final thing.
Yes?
Did you have a... You do it quiet, I'll do it loud. You're upstairs. You're closer to the baby.
I am.
To our sleeping son. I'm way down in the sub-basement of our estate.
Yes.
So I can really let loose.
Yes.
I can really scream. Did you have a burn?
Hell yeah, I did. This movie's chock full of them.
Yeah, it was kind of actually hard to choose one.
Well, because it's just like the lingua franca of this movie is burns.
That's the French language?
The movie just like, it's all burns.
Okay, yeah.
So my burn actually took place, it's right in the midst of a scene you were describing earlier, which is there is a Christmas party and it is interrupted because Mr. Elton mentions that it's snowing and what's her name? Isabella and Mr. Woodhouse start freaking out because it's snowing and they have to get home and they're worried about catching a cold and the baby catching a cold and being caught in the snow. So it's like the first course of dinner and all of a sudden everyone's up and hustling and running to the carriages. And Mr. Woodhouse is hustling Isabella into the carriage and he says,
"You will catch your death. Your husband is not strong."
It's good.
It's very good. He says it while he's sort of like glancing back at
the
John
husband.
Knightley. And John Knightley just sort of like does like a big heavy shrug. Like, yeah, you're right. I'm not very strong.
I'll ride with you then.
Evidently, I may not survive.
I think he's my favorite character in the film.
The put-upon husband?
Yeah, he's just so funny. He's so silly. My burn comes from the pivotal moment in the film at the 1 hour and 30 mark. Where they're at their picnic at, I think it's called Box Hill.
Yeah.
And Mr. Frank Underhill from House of Cards, played by Kevin Spacey, pre-cancellation, challenges Emma to kind of get the party a little hornier. And he tells her to challenge everyone to tell an interesting story. And that's too difficult. No one can do that. So he says, okay, well, at least tell one interesting story or two boring stories. And Miss Bates has a beautiful self-burn. Three things.
She demands either one thing very clever, or two things moderately clever, or three things very dull indeed.
And Miss Bates says,
oh, very well then, I need not be uneasy. Three things very dull indeed. That will do just for me. I shall be sure to say three dull things as soon as I open my mouth.
And it's a very good self-own and self-burn. And then, gracelessly, Emma picks up the ball and says something mean and snide and unkind and very poorly done.
Yeah, very poorly done.
To Miss Bates, and it's sort of, it's her downfall.
Yeah, but it also is what allows her and Mr. Knightley to love each other.
Yeah, that humility that she endures by Mr. Knightley's shouting at her on the way out of the party is eventually what makes them fall in love. What a good film, Jamie. Haven't seen it, everyone, go and watch it and then go back and listen to this episode again. You probably should have said that at the top of the episode. And then do also buy it on iTunes so that you can watch the gag reel. I would say that the gag reel is fine.
Yeah, it's
some of the gags are bangers and some of them are pretty boring.
Yeah, it's no season 3 of Alias Bloopers, which is the best bloopers video of all time under all creation.
And it's no 1989 MLB bloopers, which they used to show infomercials for all the time when we were growing up. Do you remember that? There was always baseball blooper infomercials on TV.
Maybe.
In fact, I definitely equate the phrase blooper with baseball because of all the infomercials they showed for baseball bloopers as I was growing up.
Huh. I guess I get that.
Like the time Randy Johnson threw a fastball so hard it exploded a pigeon?
Yes. But that's not a blooper. That's a murder.
Yeah, but it's a blooper too. That's definitely on some blooper reel somewhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, check out the bloopers. Check out the film. Hell of a film. I think that's it. I think we're done.
Yeah.
I've been Tanner Greenring.
I am Jamie Green and Jamie Greenring.
Please do rate and review the show everywhere that one can rate and review podcasts. That is generally Apple Podcasts and now Spotify. Do check out our Twitter at BSCC Podcast.
Yeah.
And then join the Facebook group, Baby Nation, is what it's called. It's a lot of fun. People really like it. And we put our show notes there, and you can kind of comment on the episode and find like-minded people who are also commenting on the episode. That's it. I'm trying to think if there's any other show notes that Jack goes over on the outro. I don't think there are.
Merch?
No, there's nothing up right now.
Okay.
That's it. We will see you next week. Sex bugs and bed pots.
What are we doing next week?
It's unclear.
It's me again, right?
Unclear in both counts. We don't know what we're doing yet, and we also don't know if Jack will be back, and we also don't know if Jamie will be here. So we will see. I think we're going to have to wait and see. We're probably going to read a book, given that we read a movie this week. What that book is, TBD, and who the guests are. There's one thing is for sure. I will be on next week's episode.
At least we have that.
Everything else is in the wind. It's up for grabs. So we'll see. But thank you for joining us, Jamie. Thank you for joining me, Jack. Have fun editing this one. And Sex Bugs, we will see you next week.
We might be childhood friends and I might drive you around the bend. But I'm sure it's crazy good to work it out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose. But I guess that's how
No, no, you're right, you're right. Hold on.
Yeah, just blow it out.
Put your head up. Hold on.
Yeah. Okay.
Put your hand in place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, I need a second just to, like, not laugh.
Let go to you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And keep your head up. Hold on. Keep it up.
Okay.
Okay.
Ask me to marry you.
Will you marry me?
Be married!